Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Under the sea, darling, it's better down where it's wetter. Take it from me.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Sorry to burst your bubble, but it actually doesn't sound like this under the sea.
Floating under the sea.
Of course, there is quite a bit of singing going on. Whales and dolphins vocalize underwater all the time. But these days, our oceans also contain a lot of loud, human-made sounds, like this. Dr. Leela Hatch co-directs a government-led project to map those sounds, and she joins me now by phone from the coast of Massachusetts. Leela, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much.
We hear about noise pollution on land, especially in urban environments, all the time. Is a similar thing now happening underwater?
It is, and we are starting to understand it in some of the same ways. We've been thinking about the experience of living near a busy airport or in a downtown metropolitan area. Underwater, sound travels extremely efficiently, and it keeps the acoustic energy for really large areas, and this can produce real problems chronically for animals.
So in other words, a noise that's loud 6 feet under the water will still be loud a considerable distance away under the water.
Particularly those low-frequency sounds that are made, those low tones on the piano, those are the ones that propagate those long wavelengths extremely efficiently underwater. Higher frequency sounds lose their energy over relatively short distances, but those longer frequencies, especially in the right conditions of temperature and pressure in the ocean, can travel hundreds of thousands of miles.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I mean, the Earth is only, what, 25,000 miles in circumference? That means that sound can, like, travel under the ocean sort of indefinitely?
Well, it does mean that there are conditions that have been theorized and in a few empirical cases actually backed up of sounds being able to travel pole to pole. These sounds are below our range of human hearing, but they're produced by blue whales and fin whales, the largest animals in the world, and there are conditions under which they are able to make vocalizations that in special temperature and pressure regimes called the low-frequency sound channel can travel these great, great distances.
Wow. We've actually got a sound clip of blue whales, and as Dr. Hatch just told us, they generally make sounds way too low for humans to hear, but this recording from the website Discovery of Sound in the Sea has been sped up by a factor of 10, which raises the pitch enough for human ears to hear. So with man-made sounds, you mentioned the lower notes of the piano. Nobody's playing pianos underwater, but we do have boats, obviously. We've got, you know, oil rigs and drilling and stuff. So are those low-frequency sounds, are they the real problem?
They are in the types of things that we were focused on in this project. They're are a variety of things that humans do purposefully to using sound, some of them mimicking a lot of the same things that marine animals are trying to get done out there, communicate with one another over very vast distances, understand the topography and navigate. Those are all things that we've been mimicking for a very long time in our use of sound, purposeful use of sound.
You're talking about things like sonar.
Things like sonars, exactly, and things like air guns, which are explosive sounds we make to image the benthic seafloor and understand where oil and gas deposits are. We're using that more and more prolifically.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the incidental sounds we make, and that is we're doing something else, and as a byproduct, we're producing noise. And the one we've been very focused on there is the cavitation produced by the propellers of large commercial ships.
Now, when you say cavitation, is that the motion of the rotary motion of the water?
That's exactly right. When we move a propeller of these very large vessels through the water, it produces bubbles that trail off of the propeller tips. And when those bubbles burst or cavitate, they produce a low-frequency sound signature that really overlaps strongly the vocal ranges and the hearing ranges of many marine mammals.
So this is, let's give listeners a chance to hear what we're talking about. This is a recording of a large commercial ship. this boat is 2 miles away from the microphone picking up the sound. So that's the sound of a large commercial ship recorded underwater 2 miles away. And as Dr. Leela Hatch has been telling us, part of the problem with sound underwater is it does propagate really efficiently. Dr. Leela Hatch is a marine biologist for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and is co-directing this project to map underwater sounds. Leela, are you finding that these sounds tend, with the way sound blooms underwater, even if everything's contained in a shipping lane, it's going to sort of spread, isn't it?
That's exactly. There's a very good characteristics to note. So you're going to have the experience you have when you stand near a hideaway and you have the peaks and the troughs of traffic passing you, right? You have the loud sound as the car approaches, and then you have it diminishing as it goes by. But also you know that if you live behind a fence near that that highway, that the sound really is never overall diminished. And in the ocean, you have that same condition near a shipping lane, but then it's also amplified by scale. Mm. So we're moving over 98% of the world's stuff now by ship. It's a really our main mechanism for transporting goods. This means a really large growth in container ship traffic. And accompanying that has been a really large growth in the amount of noise going into the ocean from ships. And it's a ubiquitous hum over very great distances.
So it's not restricted to shipping lanes.
No, it's not.
Now, having grown up, Leela, here in New York City, near an elevated subway line, mm-hmm. I know that after a while, you sort of get conditioned to it and you learn to live with it and maybe even not hear it. But the animals we're talking about, the sea mammals, dolphins, porpoises, and especially whales, are they able to sort of recondition themselves that way, or are you seeing evidence of hearing loss and ability to communicate? What's happening?
Well, I think the first answer to your question, to be very blunt, is that we don't know. We are just starting to understand what this means, this sort of ubiquitous growth of noise means for these marine animals. We don't actually know anything about whether humans or animals stop having a stress response in conditions of high noise. We need to learn a lot more before we understand what's going on with them and how they might be able to carry this load amongst the other stressors that they're encountering in the marine environment.
We're speaking with Dr. Leela Hatch, marine biologist for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, in this mapping project to look at where sound is becoming a real problem underwater. So then, as you map where the sounds are in the ocean, where are you finding the biggest concentrations of problems, of low sounds, of high sounds?
Well, I mean, you're getting closer to how you might apply this to a management question in some ways by asking the question, where are the problems? The problems to us kind of implies where would you focus your attention.
Right.
But the first stage of the problem is first maybe just where's reddest? Where are the loudest spots? And that's the phase we've been at working at first, which is just the documenting stage. And we've been finding, not too surprisingly, that our coastal regions and our ports are quite loud. The I-95 corridor, translates to a corridor off of the East Coast that has a pretty loud conditions on average, in an annual average way of looking at things. The Gulf of Mexico, due to its many forms of human activity, is sort of a heavily urbanized acoustic environment, as are several areas of the U.S. West Coast.
So what do you do? I mean, once you get past documenting and into managing, what's your hope?
Well, there are a few things. I mean, you start to ask questions about where might we target our concerns in terms of how this overlaps with the distribution and density of animals. That's a parallel effort to the sound mapping effort, was an effort to coalesce and make more accessible what NOAA and its partners know about where whales and dolphins are in the world's ocean, where the hotspots and the sort of the important descriptors of where they are and how they use the ocean environment. And so now we're working to integrate that information in a way that can help us ask the question, where are the priority areas to manage? But then also you can go to those noise producers, and in particular groups that have a real interest in decreasing their noise signature. They're not making it purposefully, like ships. And you can start to work on technical mechanisms to reduce the amount of noise that they're putting into the water column.
Well, it's a big project, and Leela, certainly wish you the best of luck with it. Dr. Leela Hatch is a marine biologist for NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and co-directing this project to map the sound pollution in the oceans. Leela, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is Soundcheck.